Well, I've been working on the Sunday school lesson for 3 weeks, and I feel terribly unprepared. So I'm glad it's a small audience. Less pressure this way. And you'll even notice there's no PowerPoint presentation today. So that means class participation. The first thing I forgot, we're going to talk about, today is Genesis 1. We're going to talk about creation today, Genesis 1 and 2. And my goal is this. I'm going to make a few points from Genesis 1 today, and I was going to leave some time for questions, because this field is so huge. Creation, evolution, creationism. I found a commentary published in 1877. When was Origin of the Species published? 1859. So within 20 years of the publication of Origin of Species, this was a commentary that was written that was arguing for why we need to reconcile knowledge that we gain from science with knowledge that we gain from the Bible. And it was actually arguing against a six-day creationism. This is 1877. So this topic has been around for quite a long time. Now, just recently, I think in the last couple months, it might be 2016, a book was published about why Christians should not make creation a point of personal or ecclesiastical separation. Okay, there's a whole book on why we should not. And there's a number of three views. I found two three views books, and I think there's a five views book, maybe. The three views book I have, the person who argues in favor of six-day creation, unfortunately, I think got the wrong memo and didn't. It's not. But anyway, so I thought I'll just talk about Genesis 1 today, and then I'll open up for questions. If you have any questions, then we'll just talk about that. Next week, Pastor is going to teach Sunday school, because I will be in Rockford, Illinois next Sunday. The Sunday after that, we have a missionary. So that gives me a little extra time to prepare for the next Sunday school lesson, which will be on the flood, Genesis 6 through 9, will be the next Sunday school lesson, which is good. Now, sources. I was going to bring some today, and I forgot in my absent-mindedness, but I may do this in the future. There are two sources that I think, if you're looking for information, especially for younger children, maybe with school, that holds to a six-day creation. There's two that I like, I guess you could say, or I am at least recommending. One is Answers in Genesis. This is Ken Ham's group. And we happen to be, we were given as a gift, a lifetime membership to Answers in Genesis. And so,
that's true.
I got it through marriage. We can go to the Ark anytime we want. So, got an invitation to go for the opening. We didn't go, but I don't know if we could go for that. But. Yeah, but. We get the quarterly magazine. So if you're interested in borrowing them, we read through them and then we're kind of done with them. But you might find that there's one article that interests you. And I thought maybe I could bring them. Maybe I could just put them in the library or something. I'll talk to the pastor about that. And then if you're interested in checking one out, you could do that and share it. But the one thing Answers in Genesis has, Ken Ham has matured over the last couple decades, and I like the direction he personally, as the person in charge, is moving, and I think it's a good thing. I think it's healthy. The one thing I don't like about Answers in Genesis is they make things for children childish. That's my main concern with them, is, they think that to talk to children you have to be childish, and I disagree with that. But other than that, I think their stuff is pretty good. And They're six-day creationists. By the way, they're called, for vocabulary, so everyone knows, young earth creationists. That's the term. Versus old earth creationists. But that's okay. The other one is called Institutes for Creation Research, ICR, and ICR.org, answersingenesis.org, ICR.org. And this is John Morris and John Whitcomb. This is their outfit, their six-day creationists. John Whitcomb is a fascinating person. If you can ever see him in person or see a video of any of his presentations, he is a gentleman's gentleman. And he's one of the smartest men I think I've ever met in my life. Absolutely brilliant. Ivy League school. Grew up next to Patton. He's got some... his dad was in the military. And John Whitcomb grew up next to General Patton as a little rugrat boy. And just a fascinating character. But they're also young earth creationists. They're a little bit heavier on the science of things. Their science is a little bit more technical. Then Answers in Genesis does a nice job of boiling things down. But both of those are good places to look for information. They both have stuff on their websites for teaching and for even Sunday school material. I think they have stuff. And so those are good. Now today, looking at Genesis 1, what I'd like to do is I'm actually going to borrow brains from Robert McCabe, who is a recently retired professor of Old Testament from Detroit Baptist Theological Seminary. I had him for one of my PhD classes at Central. And he has written a few articles around creationism. And he's written an article on Genesis 1, which I am going to borrow from. He actually has 5 points. I'm only going to talk about four that are applicable to my purposes today. But if you have your Bible there, look at, we want to open to Genesis 1. And actually, Genesis 1 to chapter 2, verse 3 of Genesis. And what we want to talk about today is the word for day. So the word day in Genesis 1. Let's see, Judson. You read, stand up and read Genesis 1, verses 3 through 5, loudly.
And God said, let there be light, and there was light. And God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, first day.
All right, thank you. And this pattern continues through Genesis 1 of the creation account. The word day is the word yom in Hebrew, yom, okay? Y, long O, M, like Mary, okay, yom. And you'll see this quite often when you read about Genesis 1 and the word for day. The word day is actually used two different ways here in these first few verses that Judson just read, but what I want to talk about is what is the word day mean? So when evolutionism began to start getting some momentum, theologians then had to deal with it. And they weren't sure at first how to deal with it. Like I said, here's a commentary in 1877 who's already arguing for this hermeneutical principle, this way of understanding the Bible, of bringing these two things together. And here's the problem. We'll talk about this first before we talk about day. Here's the problem. So science says that the universe is 18 billion years old. I think we're up to 18 billion now. Are we farther? Chris, Sophia? 14 billion? Okay. It's getting older all the time. So somewhere between 14 and 18 billion years old. So therefore, the Earth could not have been created 6 to 10,000 years ago, which is what the Bible seems to teach. So one of two things you have two propositions. The Bible teaches that the Earth was created 6 to 10,000 years ago. evolution says it was started by the Big Bang 14 to 18 million years ago. So who's right? These statements contradict each other. So what are you going to do? You have two statements that contradict each other. Well, you either have to prove one of the statements false, or you have to say that one of them is not talking about what you think it's talking about. Okay? So you have to discredit one. When you discredit one over the other, if I had a balance beam here, if I had a balance. One becomes more authoritative than the other, right? Somebody becomes more equal than the other. Whose word are you going to believe? I don't know if you kids have ever gotten into arguments, right? Well, she said this, but he said that. And mom walks in the room and says, well, you can't both be right. You could both be wrong, but you can't both be right. You know, so who do you listen to? Which one has more authority than the other? Tricky question. But anyway, so this becomes a matter of authority. How do you keep the Bible as authoritative and still hold to evolution? Well, most of Christianity is trying to do just that. How do we make the Bible, keep the Bible as authoritative and believe in inspiration and believe in inerrancy, but still hold to 14 to 18 billion years for the age of the universe? I don't hold to 14 to 18 years for the age of the universe, by the way. Okay. So, we're just going to talk about the word yom. So here's point number one. Yom, day, is a singular word here in Genesis 1. He says, God called the light day, and there was evening and there was morning the first day. Okay, so it doesn't say days, it just says day. And we can look at how the word day is used in the Old Testament in other places. What does it refer to? What can it refer to? More times than not, the word day simply refers to a day, like yesterday was a day, and today is a day, and tomorrow is a day. It's a 24-hour period. It's just a day. It also means daylight. We have that there. He called the light day. And we would say that the other way around in English. We would say, and he called it daylight. Okay. So, light means, often just means day. And it means that, here. And it also has the idea of daylight. Now, Genesis 2:4. Turn the page over to Genesis 2:4. Sebastian, would you like to read Genesis 2:4? Okay, so in the day that the Lord God made the earth and the heavens, how many days did it take God to create the earth and the heavens? 6. But there's only one day mentioned in Genesis 2:4. In the day he created them. Which led Augustine to believe that the entire universe was created at one time, not over 6 days. Well, here the word day refers to a period of time, not just one 24-hour day. Let's see. Joshua. Wait. All right, I lost my reference. I lost my reference. There's a passage in Joshua that says, refers to the day when Moses led the people up out of Egypt, but it didn't happen in one day. It happened over a period of days, as we know from the book of Exodus. So day can mean just a generic period of time. So the question is, all right, so day in Genesis 1, what is it referring to? Okay, it can refer to 24 hours. It can refer to a nondescript period of time. So what does it refer to? Which one? does it refer to? Now, what people do today is they try to make it not be able to mean 24 hours, which is really kind of an interesting thing. But they try to do that. So number one, can day mean 24 hours? And the answer to that question is yes. Good guess. Judson, thanks for paying attention. So can the word day mean 24 hours in Genesis 1? Yes, it can. And more times than not, does mean 24 hours. And we can find lots of verses to do that, that will do that. Now, we have another problem in Genesis 1, and it's the numbers. Did you notice that when Judson read this, it said, and there was evening and there was morning, the first day. The first day. So, we could ask the Swansons. Swansons, how many children do you have? Three. Theo is child number three. Right? Logan, your child number. So how many days was Moses up in the mountain of Sinai? 40 days. 40 days and 40 nights. Was he really there for 40 days and 40 nights? Or was he just there for a really long period of time, like, say, 7 million years? 40 ages. No, he didn't live that. No, probably not that one. No, he was actually there for 40 days. In Genesis 6, when we read about the flood, actually Genesis 7, Noah and his, the animals were on the ark. And it says here on verse 10 of Genesis 7, and after 7 days, the waters of the flood came upon the earth. Seven days. So when we have numbers with days in the Old Testament, and there's other ones where we'll look at a little bit later, the days are numbered. The days are actually means the day that they say. Leviticus 12, the woman has to bring an offering after 33 days if she had given birth to a boy. 66 days if she had given birth to a girl. That means 33 days and 66 days. These are numbers. So in the English, it's translated first day. In verse 8, second day. Where's the third one? Oh, there it is. Verse 13, third day. But in Hebrew, it's actually the number of the day. So it's the other way around. It's day one. Day two, day three, and day four, etc., down to day six. And then on the day seven, the Lord, rested from his, chapter two. The heavens and the earth were finished, and on the seventh day, on day seven, God finished his work. Okay, so the days are numbered. And that seems to mean then, if the days are numbered, they're referring to a specific day. You're talking about that day. How many days did it take to do? How many days were you in the cities? I was in the cities 2 days. Well, what happened on day one? Well, I drove into the city. What happened on day two? I graduated and I drove home. So, days, right? Now, I know a lot of you are thinking, Mr. White, I think you've lost your mind. Why is this even a question? This is a normal occurrence at home. And the answer to that question is, it really is. It would be very difficult for you to pick up any book on Genesis or on creation without someone trying to teach you that the days in Genesis, the word day, doesn't refer to day. And some are well-meaning, trying to still hold on to inspiration of Scripture in doing it, but completely reinterpreting it. So Yeah, it seems silly, but it really isn't. So, first of all, the word day really can mean 24 hours. And secondly, when we put a number on it, that seems rather convincing. But that's not all. Point number three is evening and morning. All right, Lyndon, this is where I need you. All right, so hold on a second. Yeah, go ahead. I'm going to have Lyndon turn the lights off. All right, we're going to pretend it's evening, but don't go to sleep. Okay. Genesis 1:1 and 2. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void and darkness. It's not quite dark in here, but darkness was over the face of the deep. Actually, the darkness we read about in Exodus 10 this morning would qualify here, be the same darkness. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. When God created the heavens and the earth, it was pitch black. If any being was there, that being would not be able to see the hand in front of its face, assuming it had a hands and a face. So it was completely dark. Now, then God said, let there be light, and he called the light daylight. So we'll turn the lights back on. And now we have daylight. So God makes the daylight, and what does he do? He takes the daylight, and he calls it daylight. He takes the light and calls it daylight. And he takes the darkness, and he calls it nighttime. That's what we say, nighttime. And what does it say in Genesis 1, verse 5? So we call it day, we call it night, and then it was the evening, it was morning. So how many of you get up in the morning when the sun is shining? You get up, the sun is getting up also. Are you sleeping? Or do you go to work? Okay. You get up and you work all day long. And then at night you go to bed. Does anyone go to bed at night when it's dark outside? You go to bed? Why do you go to bed at night? I mean, unless it's 30 minutes. You're tired. You're done working. Okay? You're done working. You go to bed. Notice in verse 6, God says, let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters and let it separate waters from waters. So what happens is there's water in the ocean and there's water in the atmosphere. There's a layer of water in the atmosphere. And God made the expanse and separated one from the other, and it was so, and God called the expanse heaven. And there was evening and there was morning, the day two. So, here's the picture of Genesis 1. God gets up in the morning. He works all day, creating things. And in the evening, he doesn't go to bed, but in the evening, he stops working. And in the morning, he gets up, and he starts working again the next day. So the evening and morning here shows the end of the day. God's done working. Evening comes. When the morning comes, God then starts to work again. We are created. What happens on the sixth day? On the sixth day, after God finishes creating things,
it says in verse 31, God saw what he had made. Behold, it was very good. And it was evening, morning, day six. And then chapter 2, verse 1 of that chapter, the heavens and the earth were finished. So, when God looks at everything that he says, and he says it's very good, he is, in a sense, saying, I'm done. How many of you have actually finished the project that you started? Okay? And you get to the end of it and you say, done. Do you keep working at it?
Only if Jeff Straub tells you to make it happen.
No, it's done. And so you say, very good, done, clean it up, I'm going home, this project is over.
This is what God is saying at the end of the sixth day. It's all done. I'm done creating. The end of the day, and the day came to an end, evening, and it was over. So the idea of evening and morning is it's the end of the workday, and then the next morning. What trips us up is the day is labeled in between, is labeled the next day. So it's kind of like tomorrow's Monday. I'm going to go to work. I'll go home after I work, and then I go to bed. And then I wake up and say, now day one is done. Day one being, so I wake up on Tuesday, I say, Monday's over. Well, Monday, we kind of say Monday's over when I went to bed. Okay, but they said Monday's over the next morning to signify that the next day it started. That probably didn't make any sense. So evening and morning demonstrate that each day is a normal day. Now, when was the sun created? What day of the week was the sun created? Fourth day. So is it possible to have a 24-hour solar day before the sun, before we had a solar? Yeah. Is that okay? Here's one of the interesting things. People who try to argue that the word day doesn't mean day in Genesis try to argue that God is so powerful he could create evolution. But he's not powerful enough to create the world in 6 days. I never quite understood that one. All right, so evening and morning is a day. Now, the fourth point I wanted to look at is Exodus. Let's go to Exodus chapter 20. Exodus chapter 20. You should have all this. You should have Exodus 20 memorized. Exodus 20, verse 8. Olivia's got it. Exodus 20, verse 8. Has everyone got everyone there? Olivia, would you like to read verses 8 through 11 for us? Okay, so let's say that the 6 days of Genesis 1 were just really long periods of time, and let's reread Exodus chapter 6, Exodus chapter 20, shall we? Verse 11, for in 6 really long periods of time, the Lord made the heaven and the earth and the sea and all that's in them and rested on the seventh day, which is actually just a really long period of time, still going on. Therefore, the Lord blessed the seventh day, which is still really going on, really long time, and made it holy. Do you see any problems with that? Well, let's go back up to verse 9. 6 really long days you shall labor. No. And rest on the seventh really long day. No. You see where we're having a problem? The fourth commandment is rooted in creation, the creation story. You worked Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and you rested on Saturday, if you were Jewish. Because Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday are 6 days, and Saturday is day 7, just like what we talked about. It wouldn't make any sense whatsoever if Moses here is saying the Lord created in really long periods of time, but you take them literally as days. But don't take them literally as days if you read Genesis. You see, so in this passage in Exodus, in other scriptural passages, Exodus 31 is another one, it's clear that these have to be literal days or it just doesn't make sense. And Exodus 31 repeats the Sabbath law as the sign of the covenant. And it says, verse 15, 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is a Sabbath. Again, it's just simply referring to 6 days. But then also, verse 17, In 6 days, the Lord made heaven and earth. And on the seventh day, he rested. So again, with these passages, to take Genesis, take the word day other than day in Genesis 1 makes no sense whatsoever. And there's other passages we could look at. So in Genesis 1, the word day, other than when it refers to daylight, but the day, especially the numbered days, day 1, day 2, day 3, day 4, day 5, day 6, day 7, refers to a literal 24-hour day, and it's hard to make sense out of it otherwise. All right, so I was just going to go short. I just wanted to cover those four parts for what the word day, yom, in Hebrew means. And I didn't want to get into all the other views because there's many, but I thought I'd leave it open for questions. So, does anyone have questions? Pastor?
So what do you do with the first and second chapter of Genesis?
All right.
Because it seems to be, well, you either read it, you kind of alluded to it a little bit. So there seems to be a recapitulation, perhaps, or is it,
So Genesis 1 and 2 are two creation stories, but they read very differently. So Genesis 1 starts with nothing and builds off of it, as God creates day by day. But Genesis 2 starts in verse 5, talking about there's no bush, no plants, there's no rain, there's no man, but there is a mist going up. And then verse 7, the Lord God formed man of the dust from the ground. So it looks like man was created first. But this is how I look at it. The chapter 1 is definitely chronological. We just saw that. Day 1, day 2, day 3. Chapter 2 seems to give us more of a purpose, a teleological. Why was the creation made? What is the role of man in creation? Although that's alluded to in Genesis 1, it's expanded in Genesis 2. So what's the purpose? Why is man here? What's the focal point? What are we supposed to really take as the most important thing? And we could almost say a theological perspective. So I look at it like this. So let's say you go on a trip somewhere. You guys went to the Grand Canyon. You remember going to the Grand Canyon? All right, so let's say I ask you, how was your trip to the Grand Canyon? We saw the Grand Canyon, and it was huge. It was so amazing. I thought Jonathan was going to fall over. And I said, well, wait a minute. Well, you weren't there the first day. Didn't you have to drive there? Well, yeah, we drove there. And then we got there, but didn't you stop somewhere on the way before you got there? Well, yeah, we stopped somewhere. What happened there? Well, this is what happened there. But then after that, we went down and we saw. So when I ask you that question, you're jumping to this is the best part. This was the most exciting part. This is the part I want to tell you about. And if I stopped you and said, well, what happened on the first day when you drove down there? Well, yeah, we drove down there and we listened to books on tape and Jared read, and then, you know, Jonathan fell asleep and snored and we played, you know, with his nose. And so then we got down there. But, you know, we stopped along the way. But that's not what you want to tell me about. And if I keep interrupting you and say, well, what happened on the second day? Well, what happened on the third day? No, the point is I want to tell you what's really important, the most exciting part. And I think Genesis 2 is doing that. It's jumping to, in a sense, the most exciting part, man. Why is man on the earth? What is his purpose? What is his place? Why does man not have a helper among the animals? What is his purpose in the garden? And so I think that's, to me, that's the difference between Genesis 1 and 2. They don't contradict each other in any way, but their focus is very different. Does that answer the question? Olivia? Okay, so Joshua 1:8 is this book of the law shall not depart out of your mouth. You shall meditate on it day and night. And what was the other one? 10:14. Oh, the sun stands still for an entire day. Yes. This is an interesting one. 10:14. So the sun stopped. This is in the middle of a battle. And as long as the sun is up, Joshua will be victorious. But once the sun sets, the battle has to be ended. So God holds the sun up for an extra long time. The sun stopped in the midst of heaven and did not hurry to set for a whole day. That's a great expression. It did not hurry to set for a whole day. There has been no day like it before or since when the Lord heeded the voice of a man, for the Lord fought for Israel. So the word day is actually used here twice, one in verse 13, one in verse 14. Check the Hebrew when it talks about a whole day, but I'm guessing there it's almost another 24 hours went by while the sun was up. So it was like a 36-hour day without being on an airplane. And since he says there was not another day like it, it's another reference to 24-hour day, both of them. I guess that was not what I was thinking when I was looking for the other verse. Thank you. Other questions? The current view being, which actually is now almost 20 years old, believe it or not, when I was doing some research for the Sunday school class, is that we take Genesis 1 as a creation myth, like other ancient Near Eastern creation myths. It's not intended to be taken literally, these people would say. It's just a story. Although it's a story that's inspired by God, but the original audience would never have thought to have taken it literally. So we should not think to take it literally. But in looking at that view, the real problem is they say how to interpret Genesis 1. They say you have to figure out what the genre is first. The genre is creation story. You look then at the ancient Near Eastern creation stories, and you say, how did they communicate to people? And then you say, well, it wasn't intended to be taken literally as 24-hour days. So therefore, we don't interpret Genesis 1 that way. And I think that's a mistake. Because what if you chose the wrong genre? Or when you determine what it meant to the original audience in the ancient Near East, what if you were wrong? The authors of these books don't like to be wrong. So they always pick the right ones, which is rather magical. But that's where Christians are today. They just say Genesis 1 doesn't pertain to science, so stop trying. And that because you can't look at Genesis 1 honestly and come away with anything other than a six-day creation. Because current scholars in Christianity know that, they have to dismiss Genesis 1 as even talking about creation, at all. So they look for any way they can to unexplain it, which I think is sad. But that's what you're going to see if you look at things today. It's coming out of Wheaton College, actually, in Deerfield. All right, any other questions? Creation, young earth, old earth? Gap theory. Gap theory is rather interesting. Gap theory is that there's a gap between Genesis 1:1 and Genesis 1:2 and Genesis 1, not 1 and 1, 1 and 2. Genesis 1:1, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. Genesis 1:2, now the earth was formless and void. Without form and void. So what some would say is that God created the heavens and the earth. And then nothing happened for a really long time. He didn't do anything else for a really long time. So the earth did a lot of stuff by itself for a really long time. And then he started creating. So then there's this gap of time in between. The main problem with that is all of the activities that come up day by day are assumed to have already happened in the gap of time. So they want all of those things to happen in the gap during the evolutionary stages. But then they also want them to be superintended. So it turns into one of the views that we call old earth creationism. That still tries to, it's another way of reconciling evolution with the scriptures. Well, if evolution is true, then how do we make that fit into Genesis 1? And you need a lot of time for creation or for evolution, and therefore one place we can have time is to stick it between Genesis 1:1 and 1:2. And then the rest of Genesis 1 becomes somewhat figurative after that. An interesting thing I keep talking about without form and void. I found a Jewish commentator who wrote a book on Genesis 1, word by word in the Hebrew. Very interesting. And he says about this phrase, without form and void, is it basically meant that there was no positive value. In other words, you just had the earth surrounded in water and darkness. There was nothing positive about it. And I've mentioned the blank canvas for painting, just a canvas that's prepared for painting and nothing has been put on it. And that fits with my idea that when God created this, it's not chaos. There's no chaos in verse 2. There's just nothing of any value in verse 2. And God uses it and works and builds off of it each day. So I'm not totally crazy, or at least there's two of us who are. No other questions? That was too easy. Oh, Scott. Oh, so much for that. Right. It's a good point. So which came first, the chicken or the egg? Lincoln. Thank you. I was sweating there for a second. Kind of hesitated. Lincoln. Yeah, we know the answer to that question. A grown chicken. God created a grown chicken capable of laying eggs. And a grown hen and rooster. So we know what came first. But they were grown. They were mature. They weren't chickens. I mean, they weren't, little chickens? Chicks. Peeps. They weren't peeps, right? He created them. And he created Adam and Eve as adults. He didn't create them as children. Could he have created the universe then with the appearance of age, even though there wasn't age? In other words, he created light without creating things that created light. He didn't create stars and sun and moon on day one. He created light on day one. So on day four, when he creates the sun, the moon, and the stars, could he have created a star that was, that really is, 14 billion mile or however light years away? It's already out there, and its light was already coming into our atmosphere. So we calculate it mathematically and say, well, that star has to be 14 billion light years away. Therefore, the age of the universe is 14 billion years. When really, it was already in motion. And we also have to assume, that also still assumes a constant, consistent speed of light, which I strongly question. And I think Einstein has disproven the consistent speed of light. There is no consistent speed of light.
How old was Adam?
40.
Is that the ideal age?
I think 40 is the ideal age. 40, that's good.
That sounds really good about now. I think I would have said 33.
So that's a good, that is a good point. Age of appearance. I do know someone who really struggles with aging the universe by light, because he thinks that there should be another mathematical way of equating this to 6 to 10,000 years, and he struggles because he can't find one. But it assumes consistent speed. One of the problems with evolution, you kids probably have heard this a million times, evolution has an inherent problem, uniformitarianism. Nothing has changed. It all increases or decreases at the same rate of speed and has done so for 14 to 18 billion years. And there had to be a catastrophe on the Earth that wiped out the dinosaurs. Well, guess what? Catastrophe is not uniformitarianism. The two are not compatible. You can't have both. We'll talk about that when we talk about the flood catastrophe.
So is that how you get a fossil record? A lack of uniformity in carbon release?
Well, yeah, carbon dating is only valid to about, 4,000 years? And then it starts to get its accuracy rating drops dramatically. Interesting news article. There were some mammoth bones that were found in California that were dated at 135,000 BC by an outside expert who is not privy to the dig. And they found these bones had been worked by human tools. And it was not thought that humans had lived on the North American continent prior to 15,000 years ago. There's a big gap between 15 and 135,000. This is based on carbon and uranium dating. So yes, you have this problem of assuming consistency. Carbon breaks down at a consistent rate over X number. You can't, if there was catastrophe in there, which you don't know if there was, that would have either sped up or slowed down the process. Why do we have woolly mammoths who are frozen in the Arctic of Siberia with tropical plants in their stomachs? Sounds like a catastrophe to me. Something changed very quickly and slowed down one process and sped up another one. It's a problem. Jake? Yep, it's you can take, I forget who did it. It might have been Henry Morris who did this, who looked at all of these consistent rates. Like, they measure how the rate of speed at which mountains deteriorate. Scientists do weird things like this. Okay. So our mountains are shrinking, of course, through wind and erosion, water erosion, etc. And of course, they're going to say it has to be at a consistent rate. Well, if you take that consistent rate and go the other direction and said, well, then how tall were they 10 million years ago? Well, they were touching the moon. Okay, so that would be a problem. And you can do that with a number of things. This touches on the ice cores in the Arctic, okay, where they say that ice cores build up at a consistent rate in the Arctic, and you can drill down and you see how many rings you have. You know how long it's been there because it's always consistent. What would happen then if you consistently built the Arctic back up to or back down to where it was? When did this start? Those kinds of things. They run into those types of problems. So there again, they need a catastrophe. Hugh Ross has an article in a book where he talks about, and Hugh Ross is an old Earth creationist. I've talked about him before, but he talks about the percentage of chance for human life on earth is so improbable. And he's arguing, of course, for God's divine work in evolution, but is so improbable that we could have human life on earth because of the distance from the sun, the amount of moisture, the chemicals, the air, the oxygen, the nitrogen, all of those things. If you, anytime 10 million years ago, if this little thing would have been different, you wouldn't have human life today. And he works it down, all the math. It's got a lot of tables and graphs. It's kind of interesting. As to to all the things that had to happen for life to be here as we know it. Because to evolutionists, everything is chance. And the chances are this wouldn't have happened. So Stephen Hawking has rebutted it, probably satisfactorily. No, that was Neil deGrasse. Because the Earth is the center of the universe. And Granite Falls is the center of the Earth. Yes, yes. Anyway, anything else? Okay, Pastor.